Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and every Thursday this month, we're talking with Dante Cinni, author of Our Patchwork Nation, The Surprising Truth About the Real America. For this massive reporting and research project, he has analyzed every county in the United States and come up with 12 different types of counties that define the country, from minority central to moneyed burbs to evangelical epicenters to military bastions. A few weeks ago, we looked at one of Dante's graphics that showed the distribution of gun shops as compared to bookstores. Well, he also compared the presence of Starbucks, Walmart, and Whole Foods. So let's see where they are and what it might mean. Hey, Dante, welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, good to be here.
There are some things we'd expect here and some things we might not. For example, predictably, Starbucks are found in high concentrations in your industrial metropolis counties, like New York, 10 times as many Starbucks per capita as Walmart's. And I wonder what it is about Walmart that makes them so rare in big cities. I mean, it's not like city dwellers don't need low prices or won't shop in big box stores. I know there's, you know, political objections. There are political objections to Walmart, but there's a Staples every 10 blocks. Mm-hmm. We have Home Depot. Mm-hmm. There are several Kmarts right in Manhattan. And it's not just New York. So what do you think?
Well, I live in D.C. D.C., it's the same thing. We have a big Target. Target was the big box place movement, a lot of Best Buy. I mean, if you were to ask me what it's about, I think it's about what Walmart thinks is that there are places where Walmart is not as accepted. And I do think that Walmart actually does have a sort of, I don't want to say political stigma, but there is a political connotation that goes with Walmart. And some of it may have to do with the number of Chinese goods. There are a lot of Chinese goods everywhere now, but people not wanting to shop there for that reason. I think the other thing that might not be too surprising is Walmart does like to avoid unions as much as it possibly can, and it may be harder to break into a place with a big city because there is definitely more of a union presence.
And conversely, in the counties you call tractor country and service worker centers, Walmarts are more prevalent than Starbucks. Does that tell us anything that we can't figure out from common sense?
Well, not completely. I think that there's a lot. The interesting thing when you look at the Walmart numbers is they actually do fairly well in some of those places, like the boom towns. They actually do pretty well in the boom towns, and the boom towns aren't poor places. I mean, they really aren't. They show up there at a good clip, and I think it's because those places, again, tend to be actually more conservative, and I think there are very, you know, again, very few unions there.
And the boom towns are largely the exurbs. And when you compare the moneyed burbs, as you call those counties, the inner suburbs,
right,
and the boomtown counties, the outer exurbs, you come up with a surprising finding.
Yeah, you do. Particularly where Walmart's is concerned, and I guess where Starbucks is concerned too. I mean, it's, you know, the Starbucks are really, they are most heavily based, actually, when you go on a per capita basis in those moneyed burb areas. And yet the Walmarts, you know, there's something to be said for there's more space maybe in the boomtowns, but not so much more. I mean, you see, you know, two Walmarts for every 100,000 people in those boomtown areas. You see less than one and a half in mm-hmm. the moneyed burbs. That's interesting.
You also found a lot of Whole Foods stores mm-hmm. and Cracker Barrel restaurants in the boomtowns, in the outer suburbs.
Right.
Now, for people on the Upper East Side who've never seen one, what's a Cracker Barrel?
A Cracker Barrel is a, I guess the best way to describe it is a family restaurant, is the way, what's what you, the category would fall into, with a kind of old-timey feel to it where, you know, and it's also a place where they've had some issues in the past with how they treat gay employees and black employees. They've had some issues with that. But it's a place where you go and it's, you know, there's a lot of fake kind of American memorabilia. You know, fake butter churns. Well, maybe they're real butter churns for all I know, but they look.
So if you want to think you're dining with Norman Rockwell, you go to Cracker Barrel.
Exactly.
So how does that go with Whole Foods, which usually signifies alternative eating, not to mention expensive eating and
right.
progressive politics.
Well, remember, first of all, you know, Whole Foods, it's expensive, and those boomtown places actually have money. They used to have more money, but they're still fairly wealthy by U.S. standards. So they go there because they have the money to spend. And when it comes right down to it, you know, you may not like the fact that the Utney Reader is at the checkout when you go to Whole Foods. But
if you're conservative,
but the fact of the matter is, if you want good produce, if you want good meat or fish, you may feel that, you know, I'm not so much worried about the politics of it. I just want to go there because I want the good quality stuff. A really interesting thing we noted last year is the Whole Foods do tend to be most heavily based in these, in the money burbs and in the big city. Industrial metropolis districts, and also in campus and careers, those college towns. So last year, when there was the big boycott blow up because the CEO of Whole Foods did not support Obama's healthcare plan, and then liberal voters weren't going to, you know, please don't shop at Whole Foods, and then conservatives were just going to go, you know, and it was just a funny idea of like all these kind of, you know, Bush Republicans going and filling their carts of organic arugula as a form of produce. it never really materialized, because when you get right down to it, There are some things that those people in the moneyed burbs in particular, and I think even in campus and careers, when it comes right down to it, you may not like the stance that the CEO has taken on healthcare. But hey, man, if you want your organic apples, you're going to pay.
I guess so. Dante Cheney with us, author of Our Patchwork Nation. And one surprise to me was that the counties you call evangelical epicenters actually rank high for both Starbucks and Walmarts. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, a little bit, because, you know, those places aren't terribly wealthy. But, you know, they rank kind of high for Starbucks. They rank very high for Walmarts. In fact, for Walmarts, they're top of the heap. They have more Walmarts per 100,000 people in evangelical epicenters than any other place. And that's interesting too, because there are places that are poorer than the evangelical epicenters. And it does, again, it suggests a kind of cultural, you know, stores go to places because they know that people will shop there. And I think that, you know, there's a feeling at Walmart that there's a conservative bent to what they do, and maybe their stuff will sell better. And I'm sure the sales numbers show that will sell better in the evangelical epicenters. And was I a little surprised by the number in Starbucks?
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Though I know from the evangelical epicenter that I go to, the Starbucks I go to there is buried within one of the mega stores that are that are in the area.
Right. Now, there's a Starbucks inside a Target mall in the Bronx.
Yep.
So there you go. How does this all play into your larger theme of us becoming a patchwork nation, dividing up more and more by demographics and lifestyle?
Well, I think that what's happened is these stores, I mean, this consumer side of the equation, because there's a lot of ways to look at it. The consumer side of the equation is the cultural side of the equation. And it, increasingly, as the stores are going by cultural indicators they look at to locate in places, it's leading to, you know, those places becoming more of what they are. I mean, we tend to think that the United States is actually becoming more and more similar, and it's actually really not. Because, you know, the internet has allowed for more niching, and the stores that we have in this country, even the mega stores like Walmart, they niche themselves, and that creates, you know, differences. And I think if anything, community now and where you live now probably matters more now than it has probably in the last like 20, 30 years.
You also looked at movies through this lens.
Yeah.
The part about places where Avatar actually did not do very well at the box office.
Right. And remember, some of the stories about Avatar were that it was really about, you know, the political messages in Avatar were not acceptable, were not palatable to a lot of people on the right. And it came and went in some of the small town communities I looked at while it was still playing strong in the big cities. And, you know, there are a limited number of screens in those communities. That means that they felt like they had exhausted what they could do with Avatar, and they kicked Avatar out. And so you might think, like, well, sure, but that means they must just constantly keep running movies in and out. No, because there are movies that play in those small towns that play forever that don't even show up in the big cities. And we talk about this a little bit in the book with this movie called Fireproof, which probably most people in big cities have never heard of. And it did such big business in this little community I went to, Sioux Center, Iowa. They had it there for like 10 weeks. Then they left, and then they brought it back, and it ran for another couple of months. Hmm.
And I guess in some religious communities, what you call the evangelical epicenters, mm-hmm. there was also this feeling that Avatar promoted a kind of pantheistic view of religion, and they didn't like that.
Absolutely, and the pantheistic part of it was a big cultural part of it. The other thing is, you know, it's really isn't he really just going native and ended up joining the terrorists when he goes up to the planet? I mean, there was that way of looking at it as well, and those messages didn't play well in those small communities.
Pantheism, being kind of that God is found everywhere in nature equally. I think there is some resonance here for the state of New York, because looking at your county types, downstate, the five boroughs and the burbs are what you call industrial metropolises and moneyed burbs and some immigration nation counties. But upstate is mostly service worker centers, which are among the most economically depressed and discouraged these days. And maybe that explains something about why Carl Palladino was able to get some traction upstate while being perceived as mostly a kook in the downstate area.
Right. And I think that, you know, that's the traditional divide you see. I mean, obviously, you guys are familiar with this in the state of New York. But, I mean, what we're trying to show when you go into these places is, and this is a big point of this whole project, because the tendency in New York, and I lived in New York I did my time in New York, and I love New York City. You know, there's a tendency in the people in the New York City area to look upstate and think that they're all kooks, and the people look downstate in New York City and think that they're all kooks. The point is that this is what we really try to get at with the book. There are reasons that people think the things they think and feel the way they feel about things, and it's because of the reality they live in. And that's what this book is about. These different counties, these service worker centers, they're essentially living in a different economic and cultural and political reality than the folks downstate in New York City and the burbs around New York City.
Is it inevitable, in your opinion, after doing all this research around the country, that we're going to continue to fracture in this way?
I wonder about that. I mean, we try to end on a hopeful note on the book, talk about the positive kind of attitude that a lot of Americans have. But, you know, the fact is, when you really look at these places, there are such differences, and they do seem to be going in different directions. I don't know what brings there. The one thing that I really got out of doing this project was, and doing the book was, the U.S. is just incredibly difficult to govern. I mean, there are just so many different ways of looking at things, so many different issues and added things that matter to people. How do you bring it all together? I don't know. It's definitely difficult.
So next week, for your fourth and final appearance in this series, every Thursday this month, we will talk about things that tie people together explicitly, and we'll also look at media consumption, as you documented it in Patchwork Nation. Dante Cinni, author of Our Patchwork Nation, The Surprising Truth About the Real America. Thank you so much.
Thank you much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will start a series on global English. How's this for a fact? More people in China speak English than here in the United States. And we're starting a project on our website where we want your suggestions for words from other languages that ought to become part of English. And you can start this right now. We'll talk to our guest coming up, but you can start it right now. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. You will see the page for your nominations, please. And we want you to nominate words from any other language that you think could be incorporated by English, as, of course, so many languages have. So if you want to do that, go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show for your nominations, please, about words from other languages that could become part of English. And we'll talk to the author of the book, The English Is Coming, coming up next.